And I'm Susan Granada, and I'm a retreat leader. And the title of this is The Gospel for Women, and we're going to be exploring how the gospel addresses or doesn't address issues in women's lives. Yesterday, we went around and introduced ourselves in terms of our history, our present place in religious and church and spiritual life, and there were a few people who either weren't here or didn't get a chance to, and I want to provide that opportunity. Because of the time situation, I want to ask that we would make that really brief. Kirsten? Okay. Is that close enough?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So just say just a little bit about... And also, if you have any familiarity with feminist theology or have read any of that, it's kind of what we're... Just say a little bit about yourself and how that all fits together for you, or doesn't.
Well, first of all, I work here as a volunteer. I come from Germany originally. And I think I'm not very far in my spiritual journey yet, but I'm on my way. I think I'm very into, or at least I admire, or no, not admire, but I'm really into feminist ideas, and I think I'm personally not very religious. Strange place to be here and not be religious, but I'm not really convinced that there is a God. And I think I'm 24 years old and I'm gonna study when I go back to Germany.
And who else? You don't have to if you don't want to.
My name is Peggy. I'm 39. I come from Bainbridge Island, which is near Seattle. And I was here February sojourn. And starting tomorrow, I will either be doing winter sojourn or a combination of volunteer work for the next 10 to 12 weeks. And I haven't been told yet which I'm doing, so.
And your sort of faith and religious background and journey and... Okay. I don't think I know who you are.
I'm Andrea, and I'm working in the kitchen, bookkeeping, and snack bar. Yes, and I've been here since October, and we'll leave at the end of June.
As most of you talked about your where your religious experience, where you are in your faith journey, most of you expressed nearly all of you expressed some experience of misgiving or discomfort or difficulties with the church, with theology, with your religious experience. For some of you, it has to do with the structure or the hierarchy of the church that has somehow has been your experience that has excluded you in some way. With others, there's been something lacking. You did everything you were supposed to do. The promises were made. You did it all right. You know, and you got to where you were supposed to be, and then there was some emptiness. Something was missing. There are others of you for whom, or maybe a combination of all these things, who have been specifically wounded, injured, abused by the church, by its structures, or by its representatives. And this is not uncommon. And we had one person yesterday share that, but the reality is that 70% of women report that at some time in their lives, that's a clergy man, has spoken to them or responded to them in some way that was sexually uncomfortable. It's a pretty high percentage. But the root of all these issues, I really believe, is the theology of the Christian church, which does not address women as adequately as it addresses men. My belief is that the theology has been written out of a men's faith experience and the reflection on that experience. It's been written by men for men. And I want to say again, this doesn't make it bad. This doesn't make it wrong. I'm not anti-man or the theology that's had meaning for them. What I am saying, what I have experienced, what I hear from other women over and over and over again, is that it's that experience of it misses a lot of times. In other words, it doesn't address, it assumes, it presumes and assumes that male experience is universal experience. Male reality is universal reality. And that simply, we're finding more and more and more, is not true. In all areas, psychology, anthropology, history, as women writers, scholars begin to talk and begin to write, we find there are some significant differences in psychology. For example, first the work of Karen Horney in opposition to Freud, and then very recently a book that I've just started reading and I can't speak to because I haven't finished it yet, but Jessica Benjamin, who addresses, called Bonds of Love, addresses Freud's issues. You know, I don't know if you had this experience when you studied psychology, but the whole notion of penis envy, for example, and pardon?
Oedipal
complex. And you know, I don't know about you, but when I read that, I tried to figure out about this penis envy that I didn't think I had, you know? what was wrong with me, or that women experience themselves as mutilated men. I never felt like a mutilated, I never felt mutilated. But see, this is men's experience. If men didn't have a penis, they would feel mutilated, understandably. If I didn't have breasts, I'd feel mutilated. I mean, that's their experience, projecting it onto women. In the area of moral development, Kohlberg did this wonderful study, I don't know if you're familiar with this, of human moral development, the five stages. And he studied 90 boys. And from that universalized the five levels of moral development, and women tended typically to fall at their highest at the middle stage of moral development. Does this mean that women are not moral as men? Anthropologically, the work of Rhianne Eisler in The Chalice and the Blade, which I have recently finished reading, as she has looked back at primitive societies, Neolithic and Paleolithic societies, what she is seeing is that the projection, what we've always been taught and believed, that social organization has always been hierarchical, and that man has always been a warrior hunter, and the primitive drawings on caves from the Paleolithic and Neolithic periods demonstrate this. Well, her work is uncovering the fact that this just isn't so, and this is interpretation. For example, of stick drawings that supposedly represented spears. Well, under a microscope, it shows that they don't represent spears because the barbs go the wrong way. They're really trees, they think. Mm. Trees, not spears, not harpoons. Mm. This is a reading back into, out of. So, it's not just in the area of theology, but what women are, whose voices are finally being heard and whose perspective and reality is finally being expressed, we're finding some really new things, and theology is one of those areas. I said yesterday that when I talk about the gospel, what I mean, I want to define that word again for those of you who weren't here. The gospel is that as I use it, is that which frees us from everything that distorts our lives, everything that makes it destructive. It's the freeing word. Well, if we're going to find out what that freeing word is, we have to begin with understanding our own life experience. We've sort of gotten that right as missionaries, finally. You know how missionaries used to go into the other cultures, just lay on the gospel, right? Mm-hmm. Lay on the gospel, totally destroy the culture, their sacred images, their whole reality, throw it out the window, lay on the one true, you know, gospel, and utterly destroy these civilizations. Well, they don't do that anymore, right? We know better. Now what do? We go into the mission field, wherever it is, study the culture, study this culture's experience of understanding of reality, and then ask the question, how does the gospel address what's the needs of this culture? That's what we do now in the mission field. That's what we're going to do together this weekend. We're going to go on a cultural hunt for our own culture, and rather than and turn it around and ask, how does the gospel address our culture as women? So I want to begin this morning with asking you to fill out a questionnaire. This is to collect our thoughts, and we'll share together and pool. This is not a test. But if you want to take about 15 or so minutes to fill this out, we'll start on our cultural hunt today. Oh, I tell you the right answers.
You betcha.
I hope we have enough. How many?
Can I just ask, last night I laid down a red notebook with Patty Lewis written on it back on the piano.
Oh, thank you.
I was just so worried, my journal, I just... Thank you.
Just move my stuff off the bed, I spread out. So just move it off the bed.
Thank you. How many people are not finished? I know, these are not... These aren't too hard. Okay, let's take a look at ourselves together. What defines who you are? How do you define yourself? How do you understand who you are? Let's just start throwing some things out, and then I'll put some things up on the board.
Where you're from.
Where you're from? Okay.
What else?
Your work?
Yeah, what you're doing. Your family history.
Culture you come from.
Mm-hmm. So we have our history, our work, our roles,
our gender.
I thought first about all those internal things, my feelings, my struggles, my journey, my dreams. That defines who I am, but if somebody at home would say, who are you, I wouldn't start with that. I'd start with my husband's name, the work I do, the family I belong to.
I don't quite know how to say, I'll just say internal things.
Sure.
But it's interesting that you said you would begin with your husband's name. What'd you say? Your husband's name, the work you do.
Family.
My family. Oh, you mean you can't see this?
No.
Okay. I suppose green on brown isn't probably. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. History, work, roles. When somebody said roles, more than one person had that down probably. What do you mean? What roles are you talking about?
Daughter.
Huh?
Daughter.
Mother.
This is not about juicy as it needs to be. Daughter. Mother.
It's sort of maybe there's a dark
quote
there.
All these technological problems. Daughter, let's see. How's that?
The daughter again.
Huh?
The daughter one more time. It's really hard to read.
Can't read.
Daughter.
When I think of roles, I think of my public person versus my private person.
Well, that's interesting. Public. Can you say more about that?
Do I want to?
I think that would be better.
Okay. Well, it's better.
From the time I was very young, I learned that there was a way to, that I needed, the way I should be, that I learned to play this part when I'm with other people that is socially correct, doesn't exhibit any negative, that is feminine behavior in public,
You're nice.
Well, yeah, nice. And I know that I have a real split between, and it's hard to connect the two sides of, in fact, that the private person has almost been lost in being the public person.
Because it's gotten lost because?
It just is a bigger part of my life.
The public person is a bigger part. Is it
doesn't the public person protect the private person?
Oh, yeah.
But the public person is all other defined, and the private person is self-defined.
But how do you get to be self-defined?
Listen to your inner voices.
And where do those inner voices come from?
From your dreams and your unconscious and your quiet, and you could...
And you stop doing things.
Stop doing
paying attention to your own feelings.
And how do you know about your own feelings?
You start finding people who will reflect those back to you honestly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a real sense in which even our inner self comes to us. How we know what our inner self is comes to us through others. And how that's reflected back to us. As we look at this, history, work, roles, gender, internal things, and the person who said that, I'm relating that also to private self, that those two would maybe connect?
Yes.
Would that be right?
Yes.
Okay. Roles as daughter, mother, I suppose wife, if you've got a husband's name there. As you look at those things, anything else up that you want to put up there about how you identify yourself, your self-identity?
I may be the only one, but age.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. More and more, I can relate to that.
Yeah. I thought about character qualities too, like independence and compassion. There's some of those kinds of things.
I don't know why. And for the first time, I know it's in my cage.
I call this inner thing my spiritual being. And
okay.
It came to me through running, and it came because I didn't like what all the other stuff.
I think I missed something important in what you said. You said you call your inner being your spiritual self, and it came to you because of what?
I started running a lot, jogging or running a lot. And it came to me through that because I didn't like all the other stuff. There had to be something better. Mm-hmm. So it didn't have anything to do with people reflecting back. It had to do with me finding out for myself what I wanted.
So for you, that's the way that really came up clearly, is not through...
And even to this day, I have to sort out what everybody else bombards and only take in what will fit with that. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
When you said running, do you mean while you were running, you were sort of in a meditative state where you were able to listen to your own inner desires or dreams or whatever? I'm trying to see what you meant by the running part of it.
I think it blocks off one part of my brain and makes me more receptive to other things.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So even after you're done running, it's still affecting you in how you operate?
Yeah.
The part that I'm hearing in there that I can connect with too is that piece about asking myself what I want.
Yes. Because I can't find anybody else. All I ever find are people I don't want to be like. I mean, I can get a piece of, look at that.
Why do you suppose that's so hard? I mean, what could be more natural than to know, you know, what you want and who you are? I mean, is that so hard?
We spend all these years learning what everybody else wants us to be.
And we grew up in a male-defined society. All the roles out there are male. When I was growing up, the only roles that were out there for women when I was growing up were wife and mother, nurse, And teacher.
Mm-hmm. And airline stewardess.
Well, if you're tall enough and thin enough and blonde enough, I don't know.
I don't think it's, you know, I think it has a lot to do with how mothers raise their children too. You know,
absolutely.
I see denial of, even among my peers now, I see people denying their kids' feelings and experiences, even like telling their kids they're hungry when they're not hungry, or vice versa, they're sleepy when they're not sleepy, they're cold when they're not cold. I see that denial of feelings all the time with very little kids. It starts there.
Mm-hmm. So again, going back to the, you know, if you don't have reflected, we're sort of mixing things up here, but that's all right. If you don't have reflected back what's really true, then you begin to be confused mm-hmm. internally about what's really true. Exactly. If you're told, in fact, I think, if you're told that you're not hungry when you're hungry, infants who are denied being fed when they're hungry, or who learn not to feel hungry, in fact, absolutely don't feel hungry. And what I'm reading is that a lot of eating disorders later in life stem back from that. Just how can you shut off that biological thing? Well, you can. You can.
As you look at all these things here, does anything stand out about this list for you?
There were two things that are on my list that aren't there.
That are important.
One is my faith, and the other is, I didn't know how to say physical presence or physical being, appearance, but more than appearance.
Body image?
Yeah, body image and appearance and...
presence itself.
Presence is what I finally wrote down. We have very perceived notions of what's pretty
visual,
and what's
visual.
Visual. Yeah. Physical.
And again, how does that come to you about what you look like or your visual image of yourself?
Comes through advertising
and the way people present themselves to me. It's a very external, very external, and then I internalize what is presented to me.
So you sort of take it in and own it.
Yeah.
What strikes me about these, and what is really familiar, is that for women, is their self-identity is almost non-separable from their connections to other people. For women, their self-identity is almost not inseparable from their connections to other people. We talk about the difficulty of, I don't know who I am, it's only one I don't know who I am apart from other people. Now, we automatically say that's bad. I don't think that's necessarily bad. I think it's probably honest. We talk about, well, our roles are, you know, daughter, mother. We talk about our family, our gender. The presence, our visual image, which comes from out beyond ourselves. I'm also struck by the complexity of what's up here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What do you think men would put? How do you think men answer this question?
Good job.
Yeah.
Their money. I don't know how much money they have. Their car, they drive.
But I think there's a lot of men that wouldn't do that either, though.
I don't know. Not in my age group.
You're younger. Okay. Well, then I have to say, then from my perspective, the men that I have been close with don't define themselves like that. But they I don't know, I was going to say, I think it's unfair to say every...
Yes, and I appreciate you saying that, because again, as I have a criticism about men universalizing, I would have about around women, I would have the same criticism about women universalizing around men. But the reality is that men are socialized, and they cannot escape it in this culture. I don't know if there are other cultures where, they have to work against the socialization, okay? Which would identify themselves in terms of, we got work up here, but in terms of work, what I do, and in terms of myself. A common response I get from men, and I do this workshop with men and women, by the way, most often, more than just with women, called The Gospel for Women, The Gospel for Men. Men respond by saying, my work, and oftentimes myself. I define who I am. The struggle that you talk about seems to be, maybe men do have that struggle at some level as well, but at least as they express their identity, they don't express the struggle in the way that you talk about it, and the way that women do. Ann Wilson Chafe, in her book, Women's Reality, identifies relationship as the primary means by which women right. And Carol Gilligan, in her book A Different Voice, also talk on women's moral development, talks about it in the same way in terms of connection. Women experience who they are through connection. You know, the negative side of that can be everybody else defines who I am. There's a positive side to that as well. But for women, and this is the way we're socialized and raised, relationship and connection is incredibly important. And that's the way we identify ourselves. If we are incredibly successful professionally, if we build the most beautiful, as an architect, design the most beautiful building ever created, but our relationships are in a shambles, women tend to feel that life is wrong. What about... anybody want to say anything about that? We have to be right in our relationships to feel good about ourselves.
Are we making some sort of a judgment about whether that's right or wrong?
No.
Or I'm just...
No, I want to say I think that's neutral.
Okay.
I think it's neutral, but it comes to us culturally by being female or being male, and it's pretty much inescapable.
Well, my thought is that... In a way, men are in the same trap. I'm looking at it sort of as a human condition in terms of relationship and defining who we are. Men have it also, but the thing they have, say, like in relationship, and that most women don't have, is power. And when I think about men and their relationships, it's, you know, they tend to know how to possibly use relationships or cultivate the right ones. In order to,
So you're saying your experience is that men would tend to use relationships in service of something?
Well, their choices are more deliberate, and women tend to kind of take what comes to them, or I don't know.
Or maybe relationship is the end in itself for many women. As opposed to the means.
Yeah. Yeah. Shed that idea or whatever. We're just, it's
no,
a
no,
given.
No, no, we're not, we're... The most important thing and what I'm all about in turning and talking about the gospel for women is that we are where we are, to own where we are, to own who we are, to own our power and our brokenness and our strength and our identity, and to look at the word as addressed to that. not about I. The last thing I want to do is to come in here and have people feel like they have to change how they are, or evaluate as good or bad how they are. See, that I think is part of the problem. That's part of the problem. So if women are, for whatever reasons, are socialized to, in terms of their self-identity, in terms of relationship, that's just the way it is. You know? It's neutral. Okay. I mean, you may have a personal value about that, but I would want you to hold on that. Yeah.
Well, a friend of mine is a man who's a therapist, family therapist. He was describing to me how he saw that kind of thing that you're talking about, that when women really are energized by relationships, and men are more energized by the kind of the independence and autonomy.
Absolutely.
And that they have to work real hard at relationships. Women have to work harder at this autonomy and independence. But you need a balance of both. And and it comes more naturally to women.
Yeah, and the other thing that you see, what psychology and moral development and all of that has told us as women, and this is what I'm trying to cut again, that autonomy is the ideal and the natural, way that humans are. See, and women's experience is really quite different from that. Yeah.
And what we've been told that's true. What we've also been told is that it is okay for a male person to be autonomous, but there is something peculiar about a female person who chooses to be autonomous. Mm-hmm. That somehow that's not quite right.
Or it's okay as long as you've taken care of the kids and the husband at home first.
And we can look back. I mean, that's very, very historical, and it's very historical in terms of our faith, in terms of our religious tradition. Women, if you look in the Old Testament and the laws and all that, so women were property. They just were. They belonged first to their fathers, and then to their husbands, and then to their sons. And autonomy was impossible. I mean, so this goes, we're talking about thousands of years. Jesus' injunction against you shall not divorce, which the church for many years has, especially the Roman Catholic Church, has made that mean that women are to be, and men are to be, stay in relationships and marriages that are utterly destructive to them. I think Jesus means just the opposite. When you know what the fate of a woman was in Palestine who is not connected to a man, she would probably die. No means of making a living. She could beg or she could prostitute. Those are the options. So for a man to divorce his wife meant what?
Yeah.
Probably. So when Jesus says, you shall not divorce, I mean, it was only men who could divorce, women couldn't divorce. Mm-hmm. He says, you shall not divorce. He's saying, you don't throw away a woman as a, like an old shoe when you're tired of it. People, women are not dispensable. And I think we've completely misunderstood that. Well, that's a digression. Let's talk about the next one. What? Intimacy. What's intimacy?
Trust.
And how do you achieve it?
How'd you define intimacy?
Trust.
Yes.
Openness? With another person.
Honesty?
Acceptance.
Sharing.
Caring
too.
Caring and sharing.
Touching.
Yep.
It's connection.
And I have to insist that appropriate be stuck in there.
Appropriate what?
appropriate touching, appropriate caring, appropriate sharing, appropriate openness, appropriate
so
honesty.
The mutual trust.
Risking. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to talk louder. I can't hear people.
Risking.
Risking. Okay. How do you achieve this? How do you achieve intimacy?
I think you first have to realize that you have a mask that you present to the outside world, and you have to realize that to be really intimate with someone, you have to lay that down. And you have
how
to
do you do that?
First know what you are inside. I mean, you may not even know. You may only know yourself as this outside mm-hmm. mask. And until you really know your inside self, you can't be intimate with anybody because you can't share that part of yourself with anybody. And I think when you can do that, then you can be intimate.
So how you do that is by sharing? You
achieve intimacy? No, by first finding out who you are.
So first you have to find out how you are, who you are, and then you have to share it. Okay. Yeah, Sharon?
I think intimacy is very much a process, and that intimacy is built with small little steps, and that you go from acquaintance to first what I call first level friendship, where you begin to share your opinions and things that you're not deeply invested in, and then you move to those things where you are more deeply invested. Mm-hmm. So there are levels of intimacy, and that true intimacy takes time to develop. It's something that is mutually invested by two or more people. In relationship, and the intimacy is always defined by the relationship.
So intimacy isn't something you can just leap into.
You shouldn't. I think that's one of those
shoulds.
I think
it's possible to, though.
I feel like I have had some wonderfully intimate connections with women, not sexually, but intimate. Connections with women, and in fact at times, and this has been part of my struggle, I feel like I've shared in a more intimate way with many of my friends or new friends than I ever have with my husband, who's the person I have sex with. And so intimacy for me has meant a lot of things, and I think that can happen very quickly.
What you said is very important, because you used the word sex. As we've talked about intimacy here, how many of you have sex on your sheets? Now, I think you all know and have a strong sense of what intimacy is about. You might have little meanies, differences of how, you know. And how it's achieved, I mean, self-discovery, sharing, process, small steps, this isn't about sexuality, is it?
Yeah, it's about sexuality.
Pardon?
It's not about sex, but it is about sexuality, I would say. Because to me, sexuality is a way that I am, I function, I relate to
so
all.
So that's one way of...
sex is different for mm-hmm. me. So.
Okay, then let me phrase it that way, because I think you're right. It's not about sex. You don't become intimate by having sex with somebody. Right? Mm-hmm. Sex for women is achieved through self-discovery and sharing. It's achieved verbally. Intimacy is a verbal, primarily a verbal phenomenon. Okay? What do you suppose for men?
Physical.
and this is not to say that men don't have an understanding of intimacy in a verbal way, but I want to tell you folks, this is true. Intimacy, the sexual component for men, I mean, when men get together and they talk about group, the word sex always comes up.
Always.
Every time I've done this. It's a major component. It's quite different for women. And one of the things that when men deal with questions of intimacy and when we get to friendship, this is a difficult area for them. Real difficult. So when you tell me that in many ways it's easier for you to be intimate with women than it is with your husband, there's some cultural reality to that, because there's a different perspective.
Yeah. I've been trying to explain to my husband for at least 15 years that foreplay goes on 24 hours a day, and that the conversation that we have or don't have, the physical proximity that we have or don't have, for me, is all part of foreplay. It's not fondling and all the touching stuff. But that's part of it. Mm-hmm. But without engagement on an intellectual level, without engagement on a feeling level, on a verbal feeling level, to me, there's a big hole in relationships, mm-hmm. and in sex.
And then it's just abuse.
And you need, mm-hmm. what you need to know, what's helpful to know, in both in self-affirming and in, I think, in relating to men, is that is different. Now, that's not good or bad, it just, it's culture, I don't know why it is, but it is. And in the last group that we did this with, one of the things that the men said, and by the way, I have a man, what was once my intern and now my husband, who works with the men and talks. We separate and the men talk with a man, and then I talk with the women, so it's on it. And then we come back together. But for men, verbal intimacy very often comes after physical intimacy. If women are willing to risk that, or if they're able to risk that, then they can risk the verbal. For women, it...
Mm-hmm. I can think of something. My husband and I have been married 20 years, and we have just recently, in the last 5 years, come to this understanding between us that, you know, I was always feeling like I had to have the verbal intimacy first, mm-hmm. before I could have the sexual intimacy. And I've now... gotten to the point where we can go both ways, because I can understand that to him the physical intimacy is a prerequisite to the verbal intimacy.
Isn't
and I can risk that, and it's wonderful because I can then do that for him, because I know that it allows him to open up verbally to me. And so it's sort of a give and take.
You see, and that's the gift of honoring, and that's of honoring differences, not as right and wrong, not as good and bad, but this is the way we are. This is who we are. But, you know, if you have a right or wrong about that, and I think a lot of times for women have a real right or wrong about this, justifiably, I thought. Let me ask you one other, we really have to move on if we're going to do this. Is intimacy fairly easy, kind of natural, easy thing for you? It's not for you.
Not with everybody.
Oh, of course not. I mean, that would, yeah.
But you sort of know how to do it.
You know how, kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hold your hmm. Let's hold your hmm, because when we get to the next part, I think your hmm might have a lot to say.
One thing that I just wanted to bring up that I hadn't thought about before, something Sherry said earlier when she talked about appropriate touching, mm-hmm. and appropriate sharing, is that intimacy... True intimacy is an absence of power. There's not one person in a relationship that has, for whatever reason, more power than the other person. And getting to that point is when true intimacy...
You just can't be intimate if there's not equality. I mean, you can pretend at it, but you can't really be intimate. Let's talk about friendship. We gotta hustle. What'd you say about friendship?
Friendship has a history together.
It's reciprocal.
Mutually supportive.
And a respect for differences.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a listening and a talking to communication, I guess.
It's a place where it's always appropriate to ask for what you need, and it's always appropriate to say, I'm sorry, I can't do that.
That kind of goes back to honesty, I'd say. Yeah?
Yes.
Unjudging. Sacrificial.
Playful.
Joyful, laughter, tender, and sad.
Well, we can go on and on and on and on, right? What's the difference between friendship and intimacy?
I think intimacy is a component of friendship, and for me, the history, the mutuality, the reciprocal relationship is what makes intimacy possible. If I don't have that, I can't be intimate with another person, and I have to have that trust. I think that's part of the reciprocal, mutual relationship.
Reciprocal or mutual?
Mm-hmm.
How about others?
I see it as the inverse, actually. That friendship is the larger, and intimacy is the smaller part of that. That I'm intimate with fewer people than I'm friends with. Friendship can go over years. I'm still friends with people that I haven't talked to for 4 years, but if we get together, the years melt away and we can share. But it's not intimate.
And does the friendship then, after those years, does what goes on look like a lot like intimacy for you?
In blocks of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, intimacy is something somewhat temporal, that I feel greater intimacy with people that I'm frequently in contact with than I do with friends that I was intimate with in college.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So they go through things.
Yeah, and what that says is if you're not sort of sharing your life
on a day-to-day
on an ongoing, then so intimacy is about sharing ourselves and our lives and our being, and friendship is a component of that.
Yeah, yeah. But the friendship that over the years, because I have the same friends from long ago that I still feel, when we get together, we still feel intimate, even though I haven't seen them for years. But it's because of that original intimacy that you experienced with that friend that bonded you together for life. And I really feel that intimacy does that to people. Real, true intimacy. You might think someone's a real good friend, but if you don't keep up with them over the years, there wasn't a really true bonding, intimate bonding with that person. And I really feel, I know that I'm bonded to a woman who was my best friend from third grade, and there would be 10-year periods as she moved around the country with the military service, her husband was in, that I wouldn't see her. And when I'd see her, it would be just as intimate as the day I last saw her. But I know it was because we had that bonding.
And there was a safety for you to leap in and share. And I think sometimes, my experience too, is that sometimes I meet somebody and I know intuitively that they're safe. And I can leap in and share. And so I can develop an intimacy really quickly.
But does that come from some experience with it?
You bet. Right.
You didn't do that when you were 18 or 20.
Well, I might have, but I don't know. Yeah. There's one thing I want you to know is missing here. You didn't say a friend is somebody I do something with. You didn't identify a friend in terms of activity.
Fun and joy.
I did. When I said play, that's what I meant.
Play.
Mm-hmm.
But would you name as a friend somebody that you just do things with, generally speaking?
Your tennis partner that you play tennis with every morning at 6 o'clock for 15 years. or once a week, mm-hmm. every, and that's all you do is play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
That's not
most women would not identify. I mean, they'd say, "Yeah, she's a friend," but when they when you say friend, they usually mean something more than that. Okay. So for one or maybe a couple of people, activity was listed on there, but much more friendship for women has to do with this kind of, again, verbal. I mean, really, friendship and intimacy are not very different for women. And it's important for you to note that because in a male-oriented world, these are quite different. Quite different. Men identify their friends as those that they play golf with. My husband, when he did the last group he did with, he said, okay, he said, I want, and when I talked about friends, he said, I want you to put your hand behind your, put your fist, make a fist, he said, and put it behind your hand. And I want you to hold up the number of fingers of friends that you have. And most of the hands came up like this. This is a real, I mean, I cry almost to say this. Because friendship has been defined, and experience for men is about activity. The guy that I compete with, maybe, the guy that I play tennis with, but intimacy is a physical thing. The sharing, the caring, the supporting, the mutuality that is so much a part of women's lives.
They don't even say, like, their wife or.
Oh yeah, their wife. That's the one person that they would be intimate with.
Your wife.
Now again, this isn't every man in the world. I mean, okay, I know that, but the vast majority of this really is true. And if you don't know this, and you don't believe this,
and they want everything. This reminds me of this Christian newsletter I get. You know where they put these little ads in, and the guy says, "I want friendship, marriage, okay?" And then I meet a couple of these guys, and that's what they want. They want you to fill their friendship and be their wife, and they want you to fill that spot. Because there's nobody else in the world, and they want that's what they want.
And they don't want to put the time into it.
Well, I think it's a really complicated issue. It's a really complicated social cultural issue. Yeah.
Ooh, I think it's also important to note that for those men who fall into more of this kind of friendship and intimacy model, they feel as out of it, you know. I mean, they feel like, or at least the ones that I know, do not feel like they fit in a male world either.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, one of the things that, you know, he says to me is that he feels, because for him, primarily through 12-step programs, he has really learned to develop friendships and intimacy and that sort of thing. But he does. There's something wrong with him in terms of other men, especially around men reacting to women physically and sexually. And he, you know, oh, look at that piece, you know. And it upsets him when he hears that, and he feels there's something wrong with him. He truly does, as a man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
I have a lot of trouble with friendship with men. It's something that I have a really deep longing for, to have male friends that are strictly that, just friends. Mm-hmm. And I have found over time that it's really hard for most men to maintain the appropriate boundaries around sexual relationships when it comes to issues of friendship with women. And it's very frustrating for me, because I found that it has been my responsibility to be the boundary keeper.
Yes.
That I don't cross those boundaries. I don't even think about being sexual with my male friends. That if there is a boundary issue, if there is someone who is crossing, it is the man in the friendship. And for me, that is really destructive and very painful.
Mm-hmm. And you see, when you look back and we talk about the friendship and intimacy, and know that men experience that so much physically in sex, you begin to understand that. Makes sense. And why women have much less, you know, the sexual, almost, I've never had a woman tell me anyway that for her, physical sexual intimacy precedes the sense of mutuality and safety. That's a right ordering. Never. I'm not saying there's not somebody out there, but I don't know what to do with that. Okay, let's talk about power. Question.
Whoops. Ability to influence the environment.
To control.
To accomplish a goal. Which is strange.
Okay, can you say more about
that? Well, I'm thinking of Julie, or whoever said influence in your environment. It seems to me that personal power can come out of the sense of knowing who you are.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I'm thinking of it in a very positive way.
Mm-hmm. Freedom to choose.
Mm-hmm. I remembered a textbook definition that power was getting other people to do what you wanted them to do, and I didn't write it down because I kept thinking that doesn't seem right. That doesn't fit. I don't even want to write that down.
For me, power has two dynamics. One is social, and one is personal. And personal power is very much a top-down thing and is very vertical, and social power is very horizontal and very egalitarian, and it is very community-centered.
So personal power to you would be in the mode of controlling things.
Controlling others.
And
that's differentiated from the sense of personal power that I feel as a person who has empowerment.
So you're making a distinction between yourself and somebody else?
No. Sometimes, I think when women say personal power, we mean our sense of self, our sense of control over our environment.
Mm-hmm.
When men say personal power, it's been my experience that what they mean is this hierarchical, vertical kind of power structure, and personal power for women has a different dynamic. So when the feminine use of personal power is very different from the men's.
The feminine use of personal power in that, look at what we have up here. Just what you're saying, influence my environment, empowerment, wholeness, knowing who you are, freedom to choose. This definition, though it does come up with women, it comes up in a negative way. They experience this kind of power, the power to control others, to make others do what you want, to make things turn out the way you want them to do. Maybe they identify that, yeah, I do that, but to them it's a negative experience of power. There's a wrongness about this. The rightness in the sense of power, I often have women say, I don't like that word. Anybody feel that way? I don't like that word. Anybody write that down? Or feel that? Yeah.
I have written down old meaning and new meaning.
Okay.
I have old meaning as lording over, forceful and destructive. Uh-huh. I've always had that feeling with that word power, and I've never liked it, and I've never felt powerful at all. And the new meaning to me, when I hear the word power now, is capable of changing something and full of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I like the word now, but I didn't use it.
Capable of changing.
I call it man's power and God's power.
Huh.
And man's power is all those evil things that we talk about, and God's power is the warm, firm, strong, loving, and accepting. And until recently, I didn't. I don't like being in positions of power, and until recently, I feel better about it as long as God guides me. I think it has something to do with discernment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah.
What you're saying is very typical, that the way women talk about are able to understand and experience power in any positive way. If it's positive, it means this stuff. I often have women who say, I can't talk about this. I don't like this. They have a hard time with this. Men do not have a hard time with this. One of the most fascinating things that happened in the last Gospel of Men, Gospel of Women group I did is that when the women talked about what we do is fishbowl, the women talk to the men less than they can't answer, and then the men talk to the women less than, or vice versa. When the women got to talking, when they talked about intimacy and friendship, they talked. They narrowly defined all these things, all these little nuances, and on and on and on. And when they got to power, it was like, I mean, they struggled for words, and they stuttered, and so on and so on. They finally got all this to that. Flip it around. When men are talking about friendship and intimacy, they just can't find the words, and they struggle. They get the power of band, they get it all, you know. It was so clear. And power for men is control. The ability to control persons, places, and things. People? That's the social understanding about power. And the other thing about in the man's world is power is always available to him. Men experience it. I don't know if it's true. But men will say, power is always available to me. Women do not have that experience.
I don't think that they've identified it then, because women have, in one area especially, power over their children.
Mm-hmm.
They have the emotional power, they have the physical well-being, they have complete power over their children. And I think that that's something that they take on, they want to do, they want to have, it feels good.
What's the part of it
that
feels good?
The whole thing.
What's the part of it that feels good? What's that power over children about for women?
As a mother, I would like to contradict that, because you don't always have power over your children. You don't always have control over your children. There are situations where you do, but there are a lot of situations, a lot of times, where you don't. There is a power struggle that goes on almost from the beginning.
But there's still the power. All I have to do is, I have never used it, but I sense that all I have to do is, hey, I don't love you anymore. I can't imagine, I could just devastate my children with that. And withdraw all my, well, and some parents do it. I see that is where.
So in that area, power is really, you experience power is really available to you with your children.
Yeah,
with children. How about other areas of life? Would you say that would be in other areas of life? Would you say that your general experience and feeling about life is that power is always available to you? And I also, you know, if even when you talk about power over your children, for most women, describe that as, you know, the empowerment. I have the ability to influence, to shape. That's different than power over as I can get, you know what? I'm so powerful, I get someone to do anything I want to. I mean, there might be pieces and bits of that. But the real sense of power for women is empowerment. Not this, rather than. And you need to know that's different.
You know, I worked in a prison for a while, and that's, I don't know, I always had to develop other ways to communicate and get the job done, besides physical, whatever. When I worked in the prison, it was real apparent to me that men, the bigger, the meanest, the whatever rules, it has a lot to do with physical size and all that. And so, And my son is now 220 pounds, size 15 feet, and he's always been bigger than me. So I've always had to learn a different way other than, but men don't, they, the biggest wins. So I don't
know. Physically, some of it, yeah.
The thing I see that's left off the list, and it's just because I worked in a church hierarchy, but information.
Oh, excellent. Absolutely.
And we all have, we can either keep it or we can share it. And if you keep it, you have the power to affect anyone and everyone that you want to. So.
Yeah.
What?
To control with information is, that's really true. That's it's a very effective way of.
Yeah. I don't know if it's just me or not. I jumped into my mind and I react to where my mother, the way my mother did it. I have the checkbook. And I control the checkbook. My husband doesn't even know where the checks are. Not because I've held it back from him. It's just, that's the way it is. And that is my sense of control in the family. And I don't, but... Mm-hmm. And that's, I know that's a definite reaction off of how I was raised. Mm-hmm. And, in our family structure, I have the checkbook. Mm.
So the one who controls money has a lot of power. That's. Mm-hmm. Let's go quickly to leadership. What is a leader?
Someone who guides.
Helps people keep on focus.
Someone who helps. What are the
influences.
Verbs?
Influences.
Provides
an example.
Facilitate. Participates.
Communicates direction. Ideas.
Okay, that's enough. I'm really aware of time. That's why I'm doing this. In fact, we should be leaving. Leader as a facilitator, a guider, an influencer.
Isn't the leader the one that has the information?
Mm-hmm. Information.
Or we think they do.
We hope they do.
Well, yes and no. Sometimes the leader's job is to find the information. Mm-hmm.
To be responsible for it. Leader as guider, facilitator. Is this Schwarzkopf's definition of leadership? As when we talk about intimacy and friendship, the one blends and fuzzes into the other. So in the male perception of reality, as they look at the world, these two blend into the other. Men do not talk about leaders, generally speaking, as guides, helpers, influencers, example givers, and facilitators. They define leaders as those who can get other people to get the job. Now, I don't want to say that women don't experience leadership in that way, too, you know, especially if you're in the head of an organization. But when we talk about leadership that is meaningful for us, we're talking about the guider, the influencer, the example setter, the facilitator. That's the leader we respect. That's the leader we want to emulate. That's leadership in the best sense of the word for us. It's nothing. All right, last one. We're going to talk about all these categories further, but what was the last question?
Responsibility.
What does it mean?
Responsibility. What does it mean to be responsible? And when are you being responsible?
When you need to be held accountable.
That's right.
Respect for revenge.
Using your information for positive things.
Keeping your promises.
Oh, good.
Being conscious of what you're doing?
Getting it done in a matter of personal cost.
Say that. Conscious. What did you say, Sharon?
That's just a dysfunctional sense of responsibility.
No, say what you said.
I said getting it done regardless of the personal
getting
cost.
It done. Mm-hmm.
Caring for self and others.
And doing what is right, which is always a fuzzy thing to define, but at least that's an important part for me, you know, and it has, you know,
moral kind of ethical connotations, I guess.
Doing what's internally right, what you feel is right.
What did you say, Catherine?
Caring for self and others.
Okay, caring
not
for
one or the other over.
I have found that over the years, that's been the biggest struggle for me to figure out, though, where the boundaries are in caring for self and being so responsible for everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that's been part of my sort of healing issue, recovery issue.
I'm sure. That's one of
the
things we're talking about.
I think that women have a real clear sense of responsibility. You know? Usually a phrase, was this on anybody's sheet? Usually the phrase which comes up, and it's implied in here, although it's not said this directly, doing what needs to be done. Right? It's sort of implied here. Getting done what needs to be done is what it means to be responsible. Caring for self and others, doing the thing that's right, holding oneself accountable, keeping promises. This is women's understanding of responsibility. Very important. It is not men's understanding of responsibility. Men's understanding of responsibility is who is, you know, if the buck stops here, who is going to be ultimately blamed or given credit?
The accountable piece, then. Being held accountable.
Yeah, and for men it would be by
it's
others.
It's more than accountable.
For women it's by self. Tends to be. You know, the whole issue about one of the things that Ann Wilson Shake talks about when she talks about this issue of responsibility. She says, when I have retreats with men, then one of the first things I want to do is to say, all right now, who's going to cook? Who's going to be in charge of cleanup? You know, she said, when I have retreats with women, they have to have that all, you know, all right. You know, this group is the dish team and this group is lunch. And she said, when I have retreats just with women, she said, this never comes up. She says, when it's time to cook, people cook. For men, and again, this is not a right and wrong about this. This is a different, you know, as I'm responsible, I want to know what I'm responsible for, what I'm going to be held accountable for, what the lists are, and so on and so on. Women, when something needs to be done, you just do it.